Men, do you ever feel like you just can't get ahead? Like you're misunderstood? Like you have no one to talk to that truly hears you?
And women, are you often frustrated, hurt, and saddened in your relationships with the men in your life?
What if there were a community of like-minded men going through the same challenges that would support, hear, and understand what you're going through?
Working together in unison to create understanding, intimacy, and strong connections. That's the Way of the Illuminated Warrior.
Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show is a forum of candid conversations for men and women about men. Heard every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Being a man today is not always easy. Until now.
All right, so welcome to another episode of the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show. I'm your host, Waska, and I'm very excited to have my guest, Laura Cheadle, on today. Laura Cheadle is many things from what I gather. She is a life choreographer, an author, an attorney. We're not going to hold that against you. Attorney, an international speaker, and many other things. So anyway, and I do jest a lot, so you know, take that with a grain of salt. So what I love that you do is to work with women. As I think you know, I work primarily with men. So I thought it would be a really great conversation for the listeners to hear male and female perspectives on the things that we focus on. And you you asked the question in your work and in your website, has your life been shattered by infidelity and betrayal? And I know that could be in a lot of different areas. So let's dive into that, like looking at it from the perspective of relationships. And if you want to share your story or stories that you believe would be helpful for the listeners, go get them, girl.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And yeah, this is going to be so good, I think, having the male-female perspective. I was married for 23 years when I found out that my husband had been cheating on me for 15 of those years with 5 different women. And I mean, to say I was shattered is such an understatement, because not only did it take me down emotionally, but it changed my whole worldview. Because not that I was naive, but I thought in general, people were kind and loving towards each other. And that if you were in a partnership, you were truthful and you were honest. And that if something came up, you would express it. And the whole way the world worked was just shattered. And I thought, what had I done wrong? And I must be ugly and a horrible conversationalist and a terrible mother. I mean, it was all aspects of my identity, of myself, of my worth, of what I thought relationships should be. They were all destroyed in that moment. And it's taken me, it's been 4 years now, and it's taken a lot to rebuild myself, to rebuild my worldview, to understand that I didn't cause that, to understand some of the dynamics of masculine, feminine, trauma. There's just so much that goes into it. And not to like just wrap it all up in a neat little package, because it's so much deeper than that. But I am happier with who I am right now as a person. I am more solid in my identity, in my self-worth, all of that. So I am glad that I've had this experience, because it brought so much to me. And at the same time, it's a journey that I would wish on no one, because it's awful.
Yeah. Well, I'm really sorry you had to go through that. I know how challenging it is. I was married for 15 years, a little bit of different story. I had the fairy tale mindset that, you know, I'm getting married once. You know, my parents had got divorced when I was around 17, and it was devastating to me. So when I got married, I thought it would be forever. It wasn't. It lasted 15 years. And actually, honestly, most of it was not great. After we had our second son, things really came to light that she had, you know, pretty significant mental health issues, which maybe I didn't want to see from the beginning. I don't know. And, you know, I kind of dedicated myself, and that's how I got into a lot of the things that I got into, like Tai Chi and Qigong and meditation and yoga, thinking that I was going to heal her, which you know, growing up in an alcoholic family, I thought I was going to heal my father from being an, you know, I think we know that we can't do that. We can only change ourselves. So, you know, so for me, I did what I thought I could do to heal the relationship, to help her to heal. And of course, you know, it was up to her and it didn't work out. And, you know, we had got two beautiful sons out of it. But I felt betrayed because I, you know, I have a degree in communications. I try to speak with her about it and she, you know, no blame. She just couldn't. She couldn't really communicate. And I didn't know at the time. So, which I think a lot of guys go through. I started off really on a compassionate sense, really just because I loved her. I still love her as a human being and I wish her well. She's the mom of my children. I wanted the best for her. So I wanted this relationship to work. And after year after year after year of, you know, not having physical relations, not having a connected partner, I started to get frustrated and I started to get angry. And, you know, it wasn't good. It really wasn't good. And I look at it back at it now. I'm grateful for the experience. And like you said, it's, you know, I don't wish it on anybody. It wasn't a good experience, but it helped me to grow and as a person, as a father, as a human being. And I'm just an optimist. So I look at what's the positivity that came out of it, you know, but I know working with a lot of guys go through this. And like I said, a lot of the emotions turn into anger and frustration. And so, you know, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about that. I know for women, it's more of being heard and the betrayal. So, you know, speak a little bit about that from your experience.
Yeah. And I love how you said so much of what you said. I was like, I want to go back to that. Because it was so rich. There was so much in there. First of all, the communication piece. I think, and I know I'm making broad generalizations, but men and women communicate differently. And it's so challenging to understand that it's when you're not being heard, you don't understand it. I'm very in touch with my emotions. I'm very communicative. I'm like you, my undergraduate degree is in communications. I know how to communicate. I feel like we're all communicating just fine. And we can't know when another person is not in touch with their emotions. We think we're having a conversation and we think the other person is just like us and we think we're being heard. And it's so, I mean, that's a betrayal right there. When all of a sudden you realize I was never seen, I was never heard, I was never understood. They're not in touch with their emotions, whether they're capable of it or just don't understand it. Wow, we were on two different wavelengths the whole time and never understood that. There's so much just in that. And then
I'm sorry to interrupt and interject. So when you say the whole time, like, what did it look like when you guys first got together? Like, I imagine it was more, you know, romantic, and because I want to touch upon that a little bit. So what did it look like in the beginning? How did it feel to you?
That's what was so shocking. I always thought we had an amazing relationship. I always thought we were very mentally connected, that we understood everything. I always thought we had a happy marriage. What I didn't understand is he comes from a very traumatic background. He was a severely abused child, both emotionally, physically. Was not in touch with his emotions. Like he will say to this day, I thought there were two emotions, anger and rage, and maybe with some sadness thrown in. So I'm functioning with this full range of emotion, not because I'm better, not because I'm more connected, but because of my past, because of my experience, because of my childhood, I'm functioning with this full range of emotions. He's functioning with a very limited range of emotion, feeling a lot of shame, a lot of anger, a lot of rage, and he would shut down. And I would think, oh, he's just quiet. So I think we'd have a fight over something, which I would think is a normal marital fight. He wants to go to this restaurant. I want to go to the other one. We're having a little conflict over where to go. Not a big deal. Like to me, it's not a big deal. In his mind, this was a huge threat. She's rejecting me. She's leaving me. She doesn't want to go to my restaurant. She doesn't love me. What does this mean? I bet she's cheating on me. Oh my God, how am I going to protect myself? Same situation, totally different stories. One of the stories that we've gone back to several times that came out in counseling, when he would get really angry, really enraged with me, he would get up early without saying anything, never saying that I hurt his feelings, never saying he was mad, never saying he was upset. He would get up early and he would leave for work. I would wake up with the two kids. I'd notice he's gone. I would go into a state of compassion. Oh my gosh, this poor man who doesn't like to get up early. He must have so much going on. He didn't want to wake me up. He's just, I'm not going to call him. I'm not going to bug him. I can't believe what he is going through. This has got to be so difficult. Whereas from his side of the story, he'd be at work thinking, I can't believe she's not calling me. If she loved me, she would call me. If she loved me, she would ask why I left in such a rage. I never thought he left in a rage. I mean, we just looked at things so differently.
It's like Mars and Venus, if you ever read, you know, John Gray's book, and that communication is like so important. And like, just like you're saying, it's like you have a whole perspective and he's got a whole perspective, and it's two different worlds, two different planets, which is really unfortunate, you know, because we're not really taught how to communicate when we're young, and then we learn from our parents and other exterior relationships and all. And another point that you made, which is really so, so important. I think we're a society of traumatically affected individuals. There was a really good documentary out now by Dr. Gabor Mate. I don't know if you ever saw it or not, you know, the wisdom of trauma. And there's a lot of really important points there that we've all been traumatized in one way, shape, or form. And we're walking around with this trauma that we more than likely got when we were very, very young.
Right.
So if we don't heal that, and find the tools to heal that, we bring it into every relationship that we're in, and all these assumptions that we make and all these hurts we take on, that just like you're saying there, that's not what I meant. That's not what I said. That's not what I'm thinking. But yet we're like, whew, like ships crossing in the night. And it's sad. It really is sad, you know? Yeah. So with the betrayal of what he did, cheating on you, which, you know, I apologize. I, you know, as a man, I mean, I just, you know, my dad did that to my mom, and maybe that's why I went in the totally opposite direction. I saw the hurt that it perpetrated on her heart. Working with guys, I'm not going to say I understand it, but it's, you know, it is a lashing out, and there is a lot of anger, and there is a violence aspect to it also. And it's absolutely no excuse. But I will say a lot of guys just do not have the tools, and they're not equipped with dealing and communicating and emoting and sharing their feelings. So they do hurtful things like that, you know. So did you guys, even in counseling, talk about that? Like, what was his even perspective of why that was okay or not okay, or why he went that direction?
Yeah. And it's one of those things, as I explain it, I want you to know, I want anybody listening to know, there's like the heart level and the head level. I understand it on one level, but those two levels don't always match up. Like, heart level, I don't understand how anybody could do that. Heart level, it's so excruciatingly painful. I don't understand how you can engage in sexual activity, you know, in violation of, you know, the marriage and all that. Like, on the heart level, I don't get that. However, on the head level, I do understand it. From a purely academic level, he felt very vulnerable, and he was constantly worried that I was going to reject him. When, based on the trauma of his past, he had a very insecure attachment and felt very insecure of our relationship and of me. So when he would think I was pretty and successful and happy with the kids, he would feel really threatened. Oh, look at her. She's doing really well. She's going to leave me. She's going to see that I'm not feeling capable. I'm not being a good father. I'm not being a good husband. I'm aging, she's not, like all of these paranoid beliefs in his head.
Did he ever communicate that to you, like outside of, yeah, that's the sad part, yeah.
Not until afterwards. So he'd be very threatened by me. Things are going too well. I have to start cheating because when she leaves me, I need to keep myself safe. So he would reach out to partners who would never reject him because they were so much. And again, like I hate the hierarchy thing, but they were so much less than because they would never leave him. So that was part of the reason. But then on the flip side, when we would have difficult times, when things were really falling apart and then it was bad, it would be like, oh, she's going to leave me. I need to start cheating again because I need to keep myself safe. And then it was that constantly validating himself. I'm worth it. Look, I can get another woman. I can get another woman. I'm worth it. I'm worth it. And then another level of it, because again, there's so many different levels. Life is complex and difficult. And I would come to him as a partner. We've got two kids. We're running a business. There's, you know, it's hard. The problems that I would come to him to talk about were not easily solvable. So it made him feel like he couldn't help. The people he would have affairs with were the damsel in distress type. Oh, just, you know, send me this money and it'll all be okay. You're my hero. Oh, just show up and do this. You're my hero. So it would validate him on that level where I was not validating him on that level because we're in a real life. We're in a real marriage. We have real problems. We have, you know, real kids. And it was more complex. So the affair world was all to validate him, to make him feel better. And like I said, I get that in my head. It had nothing to do with me. It wasn't that I wasn't providing enough. It wasn't that I wasn't good enough for any of that. It was validating him and had nothing to do with me. But on the heart level, it still really hurts.
Of course. Sure. Sure. And my belief is, because I've heard the story many, many times, even though he may have been validated, I think he was still tormented by doing that. I don't really believe, like, in the heart or soul of any man that does that. They deep down really believe that this is a righteous thing to do. It's a good thing to do. He had to know he was hurting you and setting a bad example for the kids. So it gets back to that trauma of, you know, I look at my dad. Like I said before, I grew up in the alcoholic family. He woke up in bed. He fell asleep with his dad. He woke up in bed. His dad was dead. Okay. He was like 13 years old. And it took me a very long time to realize, okay, my dad is a 13-year-old man. Okay. He really never did progress past 13. And that made it easier for me to deal with his drinking and forgive him and forgive myself for the feelings I had surrounding it and all. And I think a huge part of this is forgiveness. You know, I think we really need to forgive ourselves because, you know, I don't know about you. I put myself through hell. You know, am I doing everything I can? What are these feelings I'm having? You know, all of the whole gamut of emotions and all. And then, of course, I forgave my partner, my wife. And, you know, I think forgiveness is a really key part of this because I don't know if you agree or not. Again, I do not condone what he did, but there's always two sides to the story. You know, I think we really need to take responsibility. You know, I could say for myself, well, I tried for, you know, 10 out of the 15 years or whatever. Well, why didn't I try for 15 out of the 15? You know, so there's always another perspective there, you know. And so I think the forgiveness and the responsibility aspect are really key, you know. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I yes, so much so to all of that. Something that I circle back to a lot. First, let me backtrack. Yes, to what you said about the shame about how he felt. It was the cheating was a violent act against him, and I was the unfortunate consequence around that. So when I think about where I stand as a soul, as a being, I did my best with what I had, and but for the grace of God, there go I. I had more skills than he had. That was a violent act that he did against himself because he didn't have the skills that I had. That's where that grace and that compassion comes in. It's not he did the best that he could with what he had. And I liked how you said your dad was a 13-year-old man. My husband was sent to foster care in high school because of all the violence and abuse that he had received early on. He was 15 when he left home. So basically, yes, he had the skills of a 15-year-old. I can have compassion around that, and I can have forgiveness around that. And it's really, it's really important to acknowledge that and to have the forgiveness for that. And also to understand that had I been raised the same way he was, those were the choices that I might have made too. And then to extend that compassion to myself too. Did I do things wrong? Of course I did things wrong. Of course I did. I have always felt my integrity is doing the best that I can in the moment. And I look back and I can still beat myself up over things that I didn't do. But in the moment, I really can say, for the most part, in the moment, I really felt like I did the best that I could in that moment. And that's where I just have to stand. Was it always right? Nope. Was it always perfect? Nope. But at that time, it was pretty much the best that I can do.
Yeah. And that's all really all any of us can do. You know, I never used to like that, that saying. It's like, well, your parents, they did the best they could. I'm like, BS, you know, but it's true because, you know, I remember being like 39 and then 49 and looking back at where my parents were at that time, they did not know much about life. I think there's more tools now just in self-awareness and self-growth, and they did the best that they could. They really did. So I think that is important to acknowledge, as you were saying, and just have that forgiveness, because that's all where any of us are doing the best we could. And as long as we are doing the best we could, you know, we move forward and hopefully learn from it. And then that the other huge aspect is the healing part, because we are all affected by trauma. So what would you say your healing process was, and what were the, you know, aha moments or things that helped you to heal through it and move forward?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me was realizing that I have a choice. In every single moment, I have a choice. And like you, I used to hate the phrase "the best that they could," because I think, oh yeah, what a cop out, you know? Oh yeah, it's the best that I can do right now. And to realize that, when I realized that about everybody else, when I realized that we're all damaged, that we're all struggling, that some of us have more tools and more skills than others of us, and some that I have the choice. I can choose to interact with you, or I can bless and release you. And there's really nothing bad or wrong about that. But I don't have to continue to be in relationship with people who are so damaged that it's impacting me. And it's not rude, and it's not saying, oh, I'm cutting off all these people because they're just not as good as I am. It's not that. It's a choice. I choose to work with some people who have some kinds of trauma, and I choose to not go there with other people. I am not interested in working with pedophiles, say. It's not like a judgment. It's that where I don't choose to put my energy. There are certain addictions I don't want to be around. And I can create boundaries for myself as a human, as a soul, that I don't want to be around. And that is part of that healing journey for me, realizing it's my life and it's my choice. And I can still be kind and compassionate and say, I love you and I see you and I'm sorry and I forgive you and all of that good stuff. And I'm not going forward in a relationship with you because I love myself enough to create those boundaries and to stand where I stand. And that was that's how healing really started for me, is realizing it is my choice and it is my experience. And I'm willing to dance this dance with my husband going forward to a certain extent. And I'll learn and I'll grow and we can continue to be in relationship. But here's where I won't go.
Yeah, that's so vital. I love what you're saying. I don't love that we do what we have to do to take care of ourselves by putting people out of our lives that have, like, call them energy vampires. But I've had to do the same thing also. And growing up again in that alcoholic family, it was like that. If you ever read The Dance of Anger by Harriet Lerner, you know, it's that triangle of dysfunctional behavior. And if one person, which was me, steps out of that triangle, that dysfunctional, you know, paradigm, the rest, you know, they want to suck you back in, because as unhealthy as it is, that's the comfort zone, you know. So I stepped out and said, hey, you know, I need some healthy boundaries here. I don't like you telling me how to raise my kids. I don't like what I'm feeling is abusive behavior towards me. And of course they were like, what are you talking about? And I get that. I respect that. But I kind of drew a line in the sand and said, this is what I need to have a good, healthy relationship with you. And I'm not going to stand for you crossing that line and being inappropriate and being unhealthy. And I think that's key in all relationships, because we're all at different places. You know, like you said, I mean, it's not a hierarchy. It's just where we are. It's the awareness that we've come to. It's the personal development work we've each done. And we're all in different places, you know. So it's having some compassion, of course, and also some tolerance, you know, that we're not all in the same place. But it's also very important, as you said, we need to protect ourselves, and we don't have to be in the space of others who are sucking our energy, who are being abusive, who are not respecting our wishes or our boundaries. So, you know, that was key for me as well. And I did that with my closest family. I'm like, you know, we didn't talk for a while, my parents, right, my sister. And sometimes you have to do that. But what happened was, energetically, they felt, and this was also a part of my healing, I didn't realize, I set these boundaries, but I wasn't totally, you know, I didn't totally let go of some of the anger I had, and I didn't totally release all that was holding me back. And when I finally said, you know what, I love them, I forgive them, it's okay, whatever they do, it's fine. They're not crossing these boundaries, but it's fine. Miraculously, energetically, they started coming back into my life, you know? So it does work, and it's important to create those healthy boundaries.
Yeah. And for me, a lot of the forgiveness was not really of him, but it was of myself, for allowing myself to be taken advantage of, to, you know, not have firm boundaries. Because like we said earlier, I'm a former corporate attorney. And after I had the second, my second baby, I stayed home to take care of everything so he could pursue his career, you know, so I could take care of everything. And I really allowed myself to get into that place of, it's all about you. It's all about you. It's all about the kids, and it's all about you. And I'm here to serve. And there's nothing wrong with service. Service is good. But when it gets to that abusive place of, I have no needs, I will not speak my needs, I will not assert my needs, I will not ask for anything, I will allow every boundary to be eroded, I really had to forgive myself. Like, why did I allow myself to just put up with so much, to not address it? Why did I do that?
Probably the trauma that you suffered going back, right? I mean,
exactly. So it's like, I have to forgive me too, because we're in relationship. And I like how you went to the, you know, the triangle, because that's exactly what it was. This was our pattern. And sadly, it took something really bad, the infidelity, to disrupt that and to break us all out.
We'll be right back after this.
Do you sometimes feel down, lost, or lonely? Are your finances feeling sluggish? Can your relationships use a healthy tune-up? Don't fear, bro. Help is here. Experience the benefits of connecting with other men who are going through similar challenges. Be supported in our safe, sacred, and inspiring monthly telecircle with the Brotherhood of the Illuminated Warriors. Connect with Waska for one-on-one mentoring with the first session completely free. What have you got to lose? Check out illuminatedwarrior.com or send an email to Waska at illuminatedwarrior.com. you're invited to step up your game and join us. You'll be glad you did.
You ever read the book We by Robert A. Johnson?
No.
It's it really had a profound effect on me. He also wrote He and She, but We is it's a tale told back like in the Middle Ages, like King Arthur type of times. But it's about Tristan and Isolde, and they're two characters that you might have heard of before. But yeah. It really struck a chord, and I looked at it, and I'm like, wow, I have definitely done that, and working with countless men, I think most men do this. Okay, so from the male perspective, I see, I'll use you as an example. I see Laura, oh my God, she's beautiful, she's gorgeous, she's like, she's really smart, she's doing her own thing, she's probably financially well off, she's a good mom and all this. I put you up on this pedestal. I don't really even know you, but like, it's the physical affect, and like my endorphins are pumping, and I'm like feeling all emotional, and I want you. I want you because you are going to make me feel so good about me. Okay. And it's like, you don't know that I've put you up on this pedestal. You don't know that I've created this goddess within you, which you can't possibly sustain, fulfill, or live up to. So, you know, in due time, they say usually if your relationship survived 2 years, you know, maybe it might be real. But, you know, so of course the all these feelings and everything else are going to wane because I've created this illusion, this Maya that is not certainly not fair to you, but it's also ridiculous of me to feel that way. And speaking to guys about this, a lot of us have done this in the past. You know, we have this, you know, this illusion of like, oh my God, this beautiful, wonderful woman is going to save me and make me whole and make me feel so good about myself. And it's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. And that's what the book is about. And the long and short of it is from the perspective of males, but also in relationship, to pursue a romantic relationship as the be all end all, it's very difficult that it will actually succeed, to find the commonalities, to find the core beliefs, to find relatedness with somebody, you know, that's what you build a relationship on. And then, you know, because romance, it really is Maya, you know, I mean, we all get old, our skin starts getting this and like, well, Laura's not as hot as she was 30 years, you know, and it's really kind of pathetic, you know? So anyway, I think it's a great book. For me, it really was an aha moment. I'm like, wow, okay, I was this shallow guy too for a while. Point being is that I think a lot of us men don't realize that we're doing that because we haven't been taught. We see what our dads did, and God, the stories from our dads. You know, I'm not saying they were all, you know, traumatic relationships, but our dads and their dads before really didn't know what a healthy relationship was. Oh. General term, but for the most part, you know, so I don't know how you relate to that or if you've seen that in relationships or with men and women, kind of the opposite also. They're seeking, you know, this with the book, they're seeking a partner, they're seeking somebody who could support them, they're seeking to be cherished, and, you know, but we never communicate any of this in a healthy way, you know, so like, wow, I wonder why these things happen, right?
Right. Why does this not work? Yeah, no, so much. I'm looking forward to reading that. I actually just wrote that down. Very much. Yes. In our situation too, when we got married, our wedding toast, Sean stood up and he cried and he said, "Today I married happiness." And his belief was, because I'm just naturally effervescent and happy and energetic. Like, that's just my personality. And same thing, you know, we dated for a long time. I made him feel so good. And he thought that was my job, was to sustain his happiness. And as we got busy, I mean, I did my darndest to sustain his happiness, but that's not something that a human can do. That's not realistic. And then on the flip side, he's a big guy. He's a strong, you know, manly looking guy. I always thought he was a rock. I thought I could go to him with everything. Things, even though I'm a lawyer, negotiating really stresses me out. So things like, yeah, negotiating for a new car or for, you know what I mean? Things like that. Oh, they just stress me out. So I'd go to him and I'd be like, oh, you've got to help me. Blah, blah, blah. And he would always come back with, do a better job, do a better job. And it'd be like, ouch, you know? And I'm like, inside, I'm not saying it, but I'm like, you're my rock. You're supposed to be good at this. You're supposed to take care of me. And then inside, and again, he's not saying it. He's like, you're just supposed to be there to make me happy. You're not supposed to come to me to ask about negotiating for a car because you don't want to do it because it stresses you out. So yeah, you know, we're hitting head on, disappointing each other, not seeing each other as human, and then getting mad at the other person because, yeah, why, you're supposed to take care of that. You're supposed to, quote, be the man. I'm supposed to be able to come to you with these things. Why can't I?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I think they're the paradigms we grow up with. And yet again, did you even really talk about that stuff with him?
No. Never.
Why would you? Because we don't, because we just have this illusion of what it's supposed to be, of what, you know, maybe we saw our parents were, or the fairy tale media, you know, movies of like, oh, that's what it's supposed to be. And so we just go on assuming like, well, he thinks this and she thinks that, and she's going to support me and I'm going to support him. And then unfortunately, you know, reality strikes. And if we don't really decide to be present and say, hey, you know, honey, I'm realizing this is different than I thought it was going to be. Like, could we sit down and actually have a conversation maybe we should have had, you know, before we
way back?
You know, yeah. But really, so many of the times that I ask those questions, I'm like, did you ever speak with her about this? Did you ever speak with him about it? And it's like, no. And I, hey, same to a degree with myself. So I think until we get on that journey of really what's called like self-mastery. Like I was in two long-term relationships, a 15-year marriage and then a 9-year relationship. And even at the end of the 9-year relationship, I realized, oh my God, I said I wasn't going to do this. My thing was, not is, I was an enabler, you know? So whatever, you know, I know it comes from, you know, being the good little boy growing up in that alcoholic family. Don't make waves, do whatever you have to do to make everybody happy. At my own detriment. And I did it again. And I sat back after that. I'm like, okay, I just got to chill, figure out my own thing as best as I can, which I think is an ongoing process, and realize what my role was even in the second long-term relationship and say, okay, you know, do my own personal healing and figure it out that I feel like I don't need you, her, anybody else to complete me, which growing up, I thought that like, oh, you complete me, which is again, an illusion. You know, if we can't be happy with ourselves and love ourselves first and be able to stand on our own, then how could we expect a relationship to be healthy and to have that unity and that communion with a partner? You know, and that's the big word for me, partner. I really feel like I've never had a partnership, a true partnership. You know, and I think that's really important to communicate and a partnership, you know, whether it's in law or it's in a relationship, you're supporting each other. You know, maybe you have one aspect that I don't have and vice versa. I'm going to support your weak areas. You're going to support where I need help. And that's how relationships should actually work, you know?
Yeah. And it's so hard. I mean, it's so simple, but it's so hard. And I agree with you. I love the word partnership. And that was part of the reason too, why it was so devastating, because I put my own dreams and desires on hold for 20 years. To take care of everybody. And I thought that I was doing that to be a good partner. And it was really hard then to realize like, wait, what? We're not in this together? So then coming out of that, trying to restructure, I have this need, and then I'll feel like I need my need met now. I already sacrificed, I already waited, I need it now. Yeah. But then that's not realistic either, because there's jobs, there's illness, there's just being tired, there's just not being in the mood, there's not being in the emotional, you know, state to deal with something. How to figure out, I have a need and I can't meet it right now. Whoa, what do we do with that? Because it's not always just, I have a need now. Okay, I'm responsive and willing and able to hold space. I'll drop everything and be there for you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hard.
It's definitely absolutely hard, you know. So looking at that word and that action of betrayal, I'm like an eternal optimist. So like I look at my dad, Yay. my dad betrayed my mom. And I speak to this about the guys I work with, really as an example. And I always say to them, if it sounds like I'm being negative or bashing my dad, I'm not. I loved him very much. I know he loved me. And if I didn't get the lessons that he taught me, I wouldn't be the person I am today. And I'm happy with who I am today. You know, I don't cheat. I don't gamble. I don't, you know, objectify women. You know, I feel like I'm a pretty good human being. And part of that is because I had, you know, sons that I did not want them to look at me the way I looked at my dad, you know? So again, no disrespect to my dad, rest in peace. I did everything differently. So what would you say, looking back on what transpired and your, you know, role in it? Like how do you think your kids fared or are faring through it? The breakup and the betrayal and all that.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. They are in their early 20s right now. Mm-hmm. And I think they are stronger because of it. I was always the primary parent. My husband traveled half time. So I did everything alone and I got really, really close to the kids. And they know how it impacted me and they know how much it hurt. And I think because of that, cheating is not even in their lexicon because they would never do it. They are so bonded to me. They understand the woman's perspective, I think, so much more. They understand and they're more aware of trauma. They have forgiven their dad and they're actually closer to him now than they ever were before. A lot of that is because he's more in touch with his emotions too, and he's talked to them about it. So again, I'm the internal optimist too. And I don't want to just like put a big happy stamp on it and be like, and it was all so good and we're all so much better. Cause it's not that. It was very painful, but the lessons that came out of it, they used to think he was a jerk. They used to be like, is he coming home again? They used to dread that. They're more connected to him now because of that. He is a different person now because of it. So ultimately, I do think they have fared well. I do think they're better off. And I hope there's continued growth around that because I'm a big believer of the whole generational healing, you know, the ancestral trauma. And I have been very determined that it stops here. And I know I've perpetuated things with my kids. I know I've done things wrong. I know that. But I also feel like if we can stop some of this big stuff here and go forward in a much healthier way, then that's what we're here for. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, the multi-generational trauma is self-perpetuating if you don't have the awareness to do something about it. And, you know, like I said, I did what I thought was best and didn't repeat the sins of the father, which is another statement right. I didn't like, but I get it. you know, but I'm sure there's things I did, even though my sons won't acknowledge it. I'm like, hey, I'm sorry if I ever did anything. They're like, no, Pops, you're great. You know, right. So I raised two boys who are, I have 22, 23, and 26 right now. So yep. Two, the youngest and the oldest are with 15-year marriage. And then I was with Ed's mom for the 9 years. So, and they're all really, really close, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
And I think something that is so important, like all of my work, I use the concept of burlesque in my work, the stripping down to reveal what's there. And I'm really big into talking about what shames you, talking about what you don't want to talk about. And I think that's something that for the most part, we have done a better job at doing than our parents or grandparents. We're more open with things. And even though it was horrible to talk to my kids and, you know, the way you're talking to your kids, it's so important just to have that all out there because then there's less shame around it. Then there's less judgment around it. Then there's less, you know, fear because so much of when my husband, he cheated for so long with so many different people, But it also, it became a self-perpetuating cycle because he like made the mistake once and then he had the shame over that. And then he was like, oh, I'm going to, and then it just becomes this, I have to do it. And then I have to go back to this partner because I was so embarrassed because of that. And then I can't say no, because if I say no, then she's going to tell, and then it's going to come out. And it becomes this whole messy cobweb thing in your mind. And then you start doing things to cover and it's just worse, and it makes it all worse. And with our kids, if we can just talk about it and yeah, this was a mistake, and yeah, this is what it caused, and yes, this is what it is. And it's that strip down and expose it, because once it's exposed, you don't have to cover and hide.
So true. So true. I mean, lying, cheating, betraying, it's all self-perpetuating. You tell one lie, you got to tell another lie to support that lie. And as a Lakota medicine man, Crazy Horse said, the truth is bulletproof. You know, I mean, it's not always easy. It's not easy to say necessarily. It's not easy to hear. But in the end, it's the truth. You know, I mean, you don't have to create a facade around something that, you know, you're making up or, you know, rationalizing. So I think that's, it's really key. Yeah. Not necessarily easy, but you know, it's the only path out is through, you know, not around, you know?
Yeah. And that, I know, especially for boys, like suicide among teenage boys, you know, is really high. And I think a lot of that is due to shame. Yeah. Kids think if they make a mistake, it's the end of the world. And it's too bad, because consequences are higher now than when I was growing up. We could make mistakes a lot easier. I think you and I are the same age. It's like in the 80s, it was like, yeah, it's kind of
a lot of mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't a big deal. And, you know, now with cell phones and technology, it is a bigger deal. And that's too bad, because then it ups the ante and it makes it seem worse in our head. But in reality, we all make pretty catastrophic mistakes often. And that's part of being human. And yeah, I wish we could all be a little bit more comfortable with that, and to have provide a little more grace and space to be able to say, you know, like even for my husband, if he could have come and said, I cheated, that could have prevented a lot of other things. And I didn't cheat, but I thought about it, you know, and there's no shame in saying that, but yeah, I thought about it. And I didn't, but I did think about it because I was unhappy and it seemed like maybe it would be something to do. I admit that. I'm not proud of it. It wouldn't have been a good option, but it did cross my mind. And I really feel that it's important to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Being truthful and letting that out, because when you carry that with you, the saying that I often quote is like, emotions buried alive never die. So whether you're carrying that guilt or that shame or that blame, whatever, eventually it's going to come out. And it's it's important to put that out there and be authentic, you know, it really is, you know, because if not, what's your life? If it's, you know, again, if it's an illusion. And a huge turning point for me was having kids, you know, really changed my perspective on things. I used to party a lot and I'm like, what am I doing? You know, am I turning into my dad? Not okay. You know, I wanted to set an example that, you know, my boys would be proud of. And, you know, I guess it's a little narcissistic. I wanted them to emulate, you know, the things that I did, which, you know, I got over that. I'm like, I'm very happy that they do their own thing. I guess I did a good job, because they're actually more autonomous, you know, than I want them to be. It's like, come home right. to pops, you know.
Right, please.
One of the greatest things about doing men's circles for so long, we've had guys like 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. And, you know, a lot of the I call it the old dogs. I'm like, dudes, listen, listen, it's very different than when we were young. And, you know, I know for myself and a lot of the other guys, we've gained so much from sitting in circle with younger people who have such wisdom. Some of them, it's like, wow, you know, we get just as much out of it, you know, as hopefully they get out of like our experiences, because it's a whole different world, you know. And I think we really need to be open to that communication and different ways and different aspects of communicating with each other and accepting and supporting each other in that way.
Yep. Well, just the whole idea of having men's circles, because it's so, I think, profound, and it's going to change our world so much, because for so long it was the idea that men are rocks and they don't express emotion and they don't have needs and they're going to man up and they're going to be tough and they're not going to talk about it and they can handle everything. And just having the men's circle to be like, nope, I don't know. I feel shame or pain or confusion or embarrassment. And to have other men talk and support, because it's not that everything is toxic masculine. Men relate differently, but it's that balance of communicating and relating in the full range that is so important, to be able to own that very masculine masculinity and to own the femininity in the masculinity as well, because we're all the full range. I've got a lot of, you know, masculine energy in me, and I've got a lot of feminine energy in me, and I want to express it all, and men should express it all too. And we're becoming more open and more accepting of expressing all facets of energy.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the explanation of that, because when I say to a guy who's kind of new to the process, like, you know, sacred feminine or your feminine side, I say, whoa, I'm like, dude, listen, okay? We all, just like you're saying, we all have feminine within us. We all have masculine within us. It's the yin and the yang. It's the complementary opposites. It's the balance. It's just, look at it as balance. It's not saying you're weak, because there's such strength in the feminine qualities of compassion, of nurturing, of intuition. And when guys actually could tap into that, they're like, whoa, wow, that's pretty cool. And it is very cool.
It's powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same with women, with what's going on now, especially what I've seen a lot, and I've talked to a lot of women. Sometimes I feel it's going a little bit too far, because women want to be heard. Women absolutely should have been and absolutely need to be heard. And some of the ways that it's happening, because guys either aren't prepared or not capable, or they're just not listening. I think it gets too young, gets too masculine when women are trying to, like, listen to me, you know? So. It's so important for us to communicate these things and just start off with, okay, we have two ears, one mouth. Let's first listen to each other. Can you listen to me? Can you listen to me first and then respond or react or whatever you're going to do? But don't intercept my past. Don't intercept my message. Just hear me out and feel me, you know? And I think is a simple process that really needs to be accepted and embraced and done, you know, in relationships. And, you know, we're talking about heterosexual relationships, but it goes with all relationships. It's honoring where we are, you know, as human beings, and just being there. That's a huge thing. I feel anyways, the presence of, like, being able to be present for somebody, to just sit. And if you're really not about just me, I want to hear what you have to say. May not agree with it, may not want to embrace it. That's okay. But I want to hear what you have to say. I want to feel what you have to express to me. And then we can have a dialogue about it. And I think that goes undone too much of the time.
Yeah. And I love what you said too about just hearing, and that you want to know, because our world is so divided right now. And whenever I have sat down and truly had a conversation with somebody, quote, on the other side, and they explain what they want, what's underneath that, I get it. Like, I get it. I have so much compassion. I'm like, wow, suddenly I see why you believe that. And if we could just do that in the world, there would be no division. There's more than one way to the top of the mountain. And all I want to do is understand why you think that path is better. Like, I don't have to agree with it, but I can understand it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll keep that in the vibe and the prayers and the energy and all. So sitting and working with as many women as you have, like, what would you say is, like, one like common or primary, like, feeling, like, or I don't want to say complaint, but like that women have, that, like, what men don't listen, men don't emote. What is it that, you know, you could say that maybe will help men that are listening, that that women, like, in a vast spectrum kind of feel is pervasive?
Oh, that's such a great question. I think the number one thing is, and again, I don't want to say this is like men always, blah, 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 that men oftentimes don't validate or acknowledge the woman's point of view. it's not necessarily owning your stuff and saying, oh yeah, I was wrong, blah, 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 but just saying, oh, I hear what you were asking. I wasn't hearing that. Or I see why we're having this conflict. I get it now. And just putting the words to that so often. And again, I hate to like point the finger, but so often men will get it inside and then they'll change their behavior, but they don't put the words to it. Mm-hmm. Now I see where you're coming from. I get it. And I think it would be so helpful for men to communicate when they have that aha moment inside, that shift, just to be able to say, I see where you're coming from. I get it now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. And just to put the words to it.
Yeah, that's like so important. It really is. And I appreciate you saying that because maybe some guys know that, but they don't actually do that. So that's a really great point. Yeah. Again, getting back to the communications and all. So, yeah. So this has been a really awesome conversation. I hope, you know, whoever's watching or listening has gotten some of the jewels of wisdom. So what would you like to leave the audience with? What's your closing sentiment? I mean, you've shared so many beautiful things, but what would you like to leave the audience with?
What I'd really like to leave people with is some hope for magic, that relationships really are magical. And it doesn't matter if you've had good ones or bad ones, whether it's your parents, your family, your friends, partner, there's a lot of magic in communicating. And there's nothing that feels better than actually connecting with another person's soul. And I just really want to encourage you to keep going forth and trying and failing. There's no shame in failing. Just keep putting yourself out there, because those moments of magic are worth it every single time.
Amen to that. I love that. Yes, magic is a beautiful thing. So I will just reiterate also, you know, I think just be present, listen, share, express, and just be there for the other person, and just don't have expectations and spread the love. My father always said, why are you always saying that? I'm like, why not, Dad? Let's just spread the love. So let's spread the love.
Well said.
Well, Laura, thank you for being here and sharing your wisdom. And hopefully we could do this again another time.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. And for all listeners, hopefully you got some good pearls of wisdom out of this. Until next time, continue to illuminate your paths with love and kindness.
Visit illuminatedwarrior.com if you'd like to go deeper and find out more about what's available within the Illuminated Warrior Men's Transformational Community. Tune in next time for more candid conversations for men and women about men on the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Until next time, illuminate your path with loving kindness.